Welcome everybody. This is the 12th lecture in our course on women in Indian Buddhism. And it is my great pleasure today to welcome Monica Zinn, who is going to speak to us on the topic of Buddhist women in Indian art. Professor Monica Zinn studied art history, Indology and dramatics in Krakow and Munich. She wrote her dissertation on the Sanskrit plays from Trivandrum in 1990. She finished her habilitation in 2000 on the topic of Ajanta painting. And since 1994, she teaches at the Institute for Indology in Munich. She is advisor to the chemical department of the ASI for preservation and reconstruction of the murals of Ajanta. These are based on her line drawings of the painting. She's contributed us regarding Ajanta and the Buddhist tales and representations, and articles dealing with the identification of narrative art in Indian drama. Her current publication project deals with the narrative reliefs from Andhra. This much for introduction, and now I hand over to Monica Zinn.
Many thanks for this wonderful introduction. Good morning to everybody. And first of all, I must apologize that we have to record this lecture. But this is exactly the same time at 2 o'clock in Central Europe time that I have my own lecture here at the University of Munich. So let us start. I must say it was not easy to prepare this lecture. We have, of course, a lot of women in Buddhist art. We have like women in Buddha life story, and all the stories are depicted in art. We have wonderful depictions of Jatakas. But when I was thinking about the topic of this lecture, this is actually not what you really need for this presentation. Pictures represent, of course, the stories, but this is just another medium. So about Maya, Sujata and Amrapali, you can also read in books, in the text. So my idea was to present to you really important subjects you can find only in art and recognize, for example, how often specific topics are represented, or which topics are represented together with Buddha life story, or just in the specific places in Buddhist monasteries. So this appears to me really of importance of Indian art for this this lecture, or this series of lectures. So Bhikkhu Anālaya gave us, I still have to find out how I check it. Yes, made this really beautiful title of my lectures, of my lecture, Buddhist Women in Indian Art. So we have art, Indian art, and we have women, and we have Buddhism in this title. And so as a matter of fact, it's, you can understand this in different ways. So according to that, I will just talk to you about these three points. First, women in Buddhist art, then Buddhist women in art, and on the end, also very important part of women in art, female beauty for luck and prosperity. So, women in Buddhist art, what is so specific about that? First of all, this is something really important about Buddhist art at all. In a sense of representation of narrative topics, this is absolutely the best early Indian art we have. For reasons which are not so easy to explain, because We just don't know why Buddhist art was so much more so spread in the subcontinent in the time like till 6th or 7th century CE, much more than Jaina or Hindu art. So this Buddhist art shows us just the life in India in old days, and this is not necessarily something Buddhist. And also this tells us a lot about the situation of women in old India. So let us start with that, but because we start, I would like to introduce to you first the places. I will show you some examples. There are, of course, just examples. You must imagine we have hundreds of reliefs, we have hundreds of statues or paintings from India, but this is, of course, just what came down to us. It's definitely not all we have. So I will try to introduce, to, as I understand it, really important examples for the subject. So the pictures will come now in sort of chronological order. The picture will, what I show you, will come from Bharat, old stupa on railing of which are many wonderful illustrations. This is today in the Indian Museum in Calcutta. Then we will also have examples from Sanchi, still in situ, really wonderful place in the very heart of India. Some examples will come from Andhra, which is also called Amaravati School of Sculptures in the south, in the southern east of the subcontinent. You will have examples from Gandhara, which is in today's Pakistan and Afghanistan. We will go to the Northern Silk Road. That may be strange for you because it is today in China, but still it is a sort of Indian art on the road. Just there on the Northern Silk Road, most of Sanskrit manuscripts of Northern Sanskrit Buddhism have been found. And there are wonderful paintings in these caves, especially in the Kucha area, the most important place, excavation is Kizil. So from there also some pictures will come. Then on the very end, some representation from the latest Buddhist art, which is Pala Sena in Bihar and today's Bangladesh. But the most important and the most pictures will come from Ajanta. Not because I understand a little bit about that, but because this is the most important place indeed, with really a lot of representations telling us a lot about life in old India. So let us start with this, maybe with this little list of what is of importance to understand Ajanta, and I can really recommend especially the book Professor Dieter Schlingloff about Ajanta. This is now English translation from 2013, but there is also German version from the year 2000. In my presentation you will see that I will give numbers referring to Professor Schlingloff's book. If you are interested about stories about which I will not have time to talk to you, or references in which Buddhist text, the story you can read, everything you will find in the book by Dieter Schlingloff. So, what is Ajanta? We are here on the Deccan Plateau, and Ajanta is sort of ravine with little a river inside. This is 30 caves, and most of these caves were decorated with paintings. As a matter of fact, in old India, everything was painted, but the paintings did not survive times. In Ajanta, we have paintings from 1st century BCE, maybe even earlier, so we always say that's like 100 BCE, maybe 2nd century BCE, in the time of the Satavahana dynasty, and the rest is from the end of the 5th century AD. So as far as we know, there were these two periods of artistic production paintings in Ajanta. So you will see examples from 1st century BCE and 5th century CE from Ajanta. It looks like that. So from outside we have facades, and this is not what we call buildings. Actually, there are holes inside of the rock. What you can forget, you just go inside the rock and you are in wonderful Buddhist place. And in this monasteries, paintings survived. Actually, by chance, this little river, the name is Vaghora. I think this is what we call in Sanskrit Vyagri, because there are tigers coming. Till today, there are tigers coming to the ravine. It's enough that one day the caves are closed, the tigers are still there. Like. So in Ajanta caves, we have, as you can see, paintings on the walls. We have paintings on the ceilings. Everything is painted. And these paintings show us life story of the Buddha, different Jatakas, representation of the Buddha himself, different bodhisattvas and so on. So that you will know, or you probably hear the stories already in this series of lectures. But what I consider of importance, once again, we will start now with this women in Buddhist art. Not specific Buddhist women, but generally women in Buddhist art, especially in the paintings of Ajanta. So what these paintings tell us? Well, this is not necessarily what you expect, not necessarily what you know from literature, or what we actually all of us love to say in India is everything as it was before. So I must say, these paintings tell us it was not like that in old times. What we see now, the story is really not important. This is actually a Mahajanaka story, if you would like to know the contents of the story. But the picture shows us the queen and the king. They are seated same high and they are talking together. The king asks his wife for advice. We have a lot of such paintings in Ajanta. We see the queen discussing with the king, sitting between the minister, like the only women sometimes in the room. We see also servants behind, and also the servants sometimes, you have a feeling they also would like to say something. And sometimes the king is even looking at them, maybe they could say something when it was really important discussion for the kingdom. So I consider just such depictions of really importance that that women had possibilities to decide. They had their own money. They had could have their own decision. They were asked. They were discussing together with the man. So that was the king's family could be different, like in average family in the country. Let us have a look into one Jataka. The story is also not of importance. If you need it, it's Sutasoma Jataka. We will just have a closer look at this part of a painting. The story tells the lioness is coming to the city, but this is not of importance, as I said. Most important is that we have here representation of the street. There are women sitting here together with men, women working in the shop on the streets. Nobody wears a veil, nobody is somehow different. There are children all around. There's also, I hope you can maybe see that, and there is a man coming together with a boy. So there were also men taking care of children. This seems to be the everyday life in the 5th century CE in India. We just thought of difference from today. We will still have a lot of pictures, so I'll just try to keep that short, but maybe I only tell you that also in Ajanta we have a principle which is difficult to understand in today's India. In India, in old India, in old days, black was beautiful. The most beautiful women, they were called Krishna, Shyamavati, Shyama. And also in the depictions, the princess has dark skin, the servants not. So that was the proud of Indian women, not only queens and princesses, but also on this everyday life that was not necessary what we expect in old India. Just knowing such condition of life, just one story as example of really many stories like that, we are here in one Jataka about Champaka, that was a king of snake deities represented in the 5th century AD in Ajanta in Cape One. So you probably cannot see very exactly the drawings. It is not of importance. We will have right now in the enlargements. But the story, in very short, Champaka, the king of snake deities, tells on his court to his wife and everybody that he is going to meditate to be reborn as human being in the next life. What he also does, and now in scene number two, during his meditating, his the snake catcher comes and takes him to the court of the king. In scene number three, this is what's really of importance. The Champaka, in his snake shape, like animal, is being brought back by the snake catcher to the court of the king. And now, what is so really interesting here, his wife, the wife of Champaka, is coming to the court of the king. She has her child with her, and she's coming to ask the king for help. It works. The king liberates Champaka and is being invited to under at court of Champaka. I think that pictures like that, you see it on the copy, now in the original, which is not so very well preserved, but now also in the drawing. So here is the wife of Champaka with a child. She is coming for to the king, asking for the life of his husband. I think would the circumstances of life in old India be different, and something like that, that just a woman can come to the king and ask for help. It was like that, and she could travel alone. She could just come with her little boy to the king, talk to ministers and the king, and ask for help. So this is not what we expect in old India, like we see that there are today's circumstances, so that may be of importance to understand also that the way of how women were understood in old India. Well, coming to specific Buddhist topics, what we several times can see in representations in India is there are meditations of monks sitting on kind of grounds and looking on dead bodies. Of course, the dead body of the women are the best for that. And this, I personally, may be of different opinion, but I personally think that this is not because of that attitude towards women, but rather to make the discrepancy as big as possible, discrepancy between beautiful exterior of the body and interior. So the women, beautiful during when they are alive, and every monk should actually think what is inside. And we have just a entire group of such texts, like here in one painting from Central Asia from Kizil. The Buddha is explaining that's the sermon about impurity. Interesting that he is also talking to the women. There are women listening to him. And in Central Asia, it's also typical that we have not only what was during the sermon, but also what he is talking about. So here, this dead body of a once beautiful woman should show us, should give us example for this ashubda, this impurity of human body, and give us topic for meditation. So this is really specific when we have women depicted in Buddhist art. I must say, there are such representations. There are, especially in Central Asia, we have them several times. It's difficult for me to say how important they were. They were definitely of big importance for meditation, and we know that the pictures should deliver topics for meditation. So such topics were also of importance. What we also see in Kizil, in on the Northern Silk Road, there are very many, like more than 60 Jatakas. Actually, they are the most Jatakas, even more than we have in Bharat, in oldest Indian representations. They are depicted there in the Northern Silk Road. The kind of Jatakas is, however, different, like in India. In Central Asia, topics about really extreme dana paramita, that somebody is giving his blood, giving his eyes, giving pieces of his flesh, such topics were really popular, and we have entire ceilings, barrel vaults, like here, just most of stories are about giving parts of the body. And among these representations, there is also one about Rupavati. So she is a sort of female bodhisattva. If you are interested, there is here reference to the article about this. So Rupavati gave her breasts for a mother. The mother was a little baby, little infant, was so hungry that she was just about to eat her baby. Rupavati understood that, cut off her breast and gave it to the mother. The point is that she could not be bodhisattva in this particular existence, so she still had to turn into a man, which was much easier because she was already without breast. So she turned to the man, and in this moment was bodhisattva. But still, she was already, as I understand that, the Buddha in his previous life. So the story of Rupavati, as far as I'm aware, the only one of this kind, is represented in Kizila ceilings, and quite often represented. So the story is really of importance. Well, so there are Jatakas, there are still not stories about what we really should say Buddhist women. Let us come now back to Ajanta and two stories about which I wonder if there was on purpose that they are represented together. So here on the wall in Ajanta we really have two different stories which really we know about it because they are identified, but if you would not know that, it looks actually like one and the same story. So we have here the story about Sumagada and the story about Mahoshata, two strong, great women, really great women. We'll start with Mahoshata, which is a Jataka. Sorry, Mahoshada is not the woman. The woman is Vishaka. Mahoshada is the man. Sorry for that mistake. But the name of the story is Mahoshada Jataka. So let us start with this. Vishaka is the name of the strong woman. So the story, I can just refer really short. Tells about a king who had really big problems in his country. He had bad ministers who wanted to kick him out of his country. They were really very, very powerful. The king took as minister this very intelligent Mahoshada, who helped him to close the might of the four ministers. But Mahoshada was not strong enough. Also his wife, this very clever Vishaka, had to help. And she was not only very intelligent, but she was also beautiful. And all ministers wanted to have something with her. She said yes to every one of them. And they came to her house one by one. And when they came, they were just caught, packed into baskets and presented to the king. That was the story which we have represented here on the wall. Was wonderful representation of Abhisheka, of a king, and the story about Vishaka and Mahoshada standing up. I must go back. I thought I have drawing, but I probably consider that you can see this. So here are the four ministers inside the basket. What is of importance, this story was represented already in the 2nd century BCE. So stories like that, talking about the wisdom of a woman, really popular. Here they are, the ministers sitting, four of them, one is still being carried in the basket, sitting there, and Mahoshada showing at them with her finger to the king. Really interesting story about a strong woman in old India. So that was one story on this particular war in Ajanta Cave 1. As I said before, interesting if there is a connection or maybe just another strong woman, why these two stories are together. Another story is of completely different character. It is not Jataka. This is a story which took place during the lifetime of the Buddha. This is a story about this strong woman, Sumagada. So Sumagada was a daughter of a man whose name you probably all know. That was Anathapindika in Sanskrit, Anathapindada, really important man who gave like Jetavana to the Buddha, coming in several Buddhist stories. He was a trader, a merchant, and he gave his daughter as wife to a really far away country. And in this country, they were not Buddhists, they were only Jainas. And Sumagada did not like this person at all, so she decided to call the Buddha to come to the country. There were not mobiles at time, so how you are doing that? The Buddha can hear, of course. She went to the roof of the house and asked the Buddha and his monks to come. So this is the story how we have it in Ajanta. First, Sumagada together with her friends or servants standing on the balcony, maybe already looking how the monks are coming to the country. In scene two, she is discussing that with her father-in-law. She asked for invitation for the Buddha several times, and we have the Buddha sitting in scene number three. Yes, and in this very point, during this this story, we go to point number two in my lecture, Buddhist women in art, because she was really for that. She was for inviting the Buddha, not only for the house of her father-in-law and her husband, but for entire country, for bringing Dharma there, the entire north. In wonderful way, the depictions are presented not only in Ajanta, but in the Northern Silk Road. And maybe because of the fact that we are here really far away from the subcontinent, maybe there was just a wish to have such stories that the Buddha could also come there to the Northern Silk Road, above the Taklamakan Desert. In this area, from which we have the German expedition, that's why we have many of paintings from the area in the Museum of Indian Art in Berlin. These stories, in these caves, there are also caves like in Ajanta, this story belongs to the most popular at all. Just to show you one typical cave, we have this barrel on those, and in the apex here, very often everything what can fly is represented, and to that belongs also also monks. They also can travel by air. So, I'm sorry. Here programs on my computer or something. Yeah, no. So we have here on the apex of one really typical burial vault. We are here like in the 6th, 7th century CE. There are beautiful representations of monks coming to the faraway country, being invited by Sumagada to come there. How the monks are traveling, it's really interesting, all this imagination that they have, like probably like Hindu gods, they can travel on nagas or sitting on garudas or different palanquins. It's really very interesting that they are flying three elephants or winged lions and monks sitting on that. This is actually what the painting said. It's exactly illustrations what you can find like in texts, like for example in Vidyavadana. This is how the monks travel in different story. In these paintings, it's better preserved, so I would like to show you just at the beginning. And this is Sumagada on the roof of her house, calling for monks to come there. So in this story, we have this strong woman. Because of her, came to missionary works of the monks. They could come to the faraway country. So coming back to this picture, I really think it was on purpose that the old painters put these two stories, one Jataka and one story from the lifetime of the Buddha, together because of intelligence, because of strong will of this really interesting woman. I would like to show you now, to my mind, the best example about such stories about strong women in old Buddhist. This is the article I sent to you before, my article, because I was able to recognize that the story. I will show you now. This is also funny to see how difficult our works can be sometimes. We are coming now to this older part of Ajanta. The time is something like 100 BCE. We are in cave 10 of Ajanta, the biggest excavation in entire site. You see the stupa outside, behind the pillars, there are walls, and walls are decorated in really interesting way. We have on the left side wall Buddha's life story in 8 scenes. This is for the very first time in India that we have entire Buddha life story from Tushita until the sharing of relics, just in one story, one chronological, put together, not separate scenes. So this is on the left side wall. On the right wall, we have two really important Jatakas, Shadanta Jataka and Shyama Jataka, probably also on purpose. One's the Buddha's animal, the most interesting, the Jataka, which is represented in Sanji three times. Shadanta must be of real importance in all time, and about human life of the Buddha, like Shyama. So Buddha life story and three important Jatakas in entire program of the cave. But what was represented behind the stupa? It was really extremely difficult work. We could see that was a painting, but so dark and so bad preserved that it took really a while to recognize what it was. I will show you that because it's actually also fun. So here you see a little yellow paper. Why I show you that to you? Because this paper you can recognize here, and also how I was working. So on the right side, or above the yellow paper, I must say I also see nothing. But with Photoshop, you can make something more. You can, for example, make the colors intensive and enlarge it, or change white to black. And with the help of something like this, you will recognize something. So let us start with this little part. Please move. Can you see anything? Probably not, but when I show you once and I go back, maybe you could recognize, maybe I still go back once again. And here? Yeah. So here we are. This is the person in turban, so that must be a king, and the person on the our left, somebody with birds. Carried birds on above the shoulder. The beginning of the painting is this. And once again, please move. I don't know why. Yeah, now it works again. With intensive colors and now with lines. I'm sorry, I have problems here. Hello. Yeah. Now it works. Dear Analio, if you can hear me, I don't know, it's maybe something wrong with internet. If you can't hear me, just interrupt, but maybe it will work. So now we see it with lines and back again without. So all that gave us this is the only part, archaeological survey of India claimed now. All that gave us nearly 10 meters of old paintings from 1st century BCE. And this is the story of King Udayana. What is interesting for Buddhist studies, that we have here a story in the version of the Mula Sarvastivada Vinaya, known later from Vidyavadana. So this is of importance because it's actually in the 1st century BCE we should not have such important differences in the text. So, but this is not because of affiliation with a particular school. I'm telling you the story, but because of the story. So, this is the story about King Udayana from Kaushambi and his wife Shyamavati. The story is known in several versions, as I said already. You can read this, the article I gave to you before. I tell you first the story in a different version, in southern, in Pali version, which is in Dhammapada Attakatha. The story tells about King Udayana, who had several wives. Here are of importance two wives. The good wife, Shyamavati, who was Buddhist, and also another wife, Anupama, who was not Buddhist, and who hate the Buddha because of different story, not important for now, for us now. And this bad wife, not Buddhist wife, started to do everything against Shyamavati. What we see here is really violent story. The old picture, you will see that better. We see a man with a bow, and he is shooting, but he's shooting on women. This is something what you really don't see every day. And the reason why he's shooting, we see here on the left side. There's a piece of furniture. There is an old Buddhist musical instrument, veena, it belongs to the story, King Udayana, of virtuous player on the Veena. And there is also a snake here. There's the snake coming from the Veena. And King Udayana is shooting on Shyamalati. So the story says that the bat wife put the snake inside the resonance body of the Veena and accused Shyamalati that she wanted to kill Udayana. The king was so furious that he cut a bow and shot 3 arrows at Shyamalati. But Shyamalati was a Buddhist, so she meditated on metta, and she just the infinite love for everybody and also to Udayana caused that the arrows fall on the ground. This is the story which must have been of really huge importance in entire Amaravati school of art. Here this is examples from Andhra. You can see Udayana shooting at Shyamalati. Here he is. On the left side, there was this bat wife, and here we see Shyamalati, but not only Shyamalati, but we see also Kujutara. Kujutara is known from this story, but we can read about Kujutara also in other books like Anguttara Nikaya, where it is said that Kujutara was the most intelligent person ever. Is the only one like Kujutara, somebody who could learn by heart all sutras. It is connected with this story, probably it is coming from this story, because Udayana did not allow Shyamalati to go out to hear the sermons of the Buddha. So Shyamalati sent Kujutara to hear the sermons and tell her after she was back. So Kujutara was there, she could remember every single word of the Buddha to repeat it to the wife of Udayana. So this little hunchback servant who could remember all sermons better as even monks could, because she was the best one, she was the only one, as Anguttara Nikaya says this. And she's really represented in this way with her hunchback. Interesting story, but in Ajanta we have it in different version. Here is no Veena with the snake, but the faller coming with death on his shoulder. The story here is different. The dead wife accused Shyamalati of something really strange and very interesting for all Buddhists. She said, dear husband, she cooked birds for the Buddha and his monks, but she does not want to cook birds for you. That was the reason why Udayana shot arrows. What Anupama did not say was something of real importance. The first time when Shyamalati cooked the birds, she got dead birds. For the second time, the father came with living birds. So of course she could not, like a Buddhist, killed animals, and she bought them and let them flow away. So that's what the bad wife did not say, but it's also a very interesting story. So here it is surely belonging to this story. In a big part of this painting, there are women coming with bowls, so that the food was really of importance here in this place, and also the probably the king and the man with birds above his shoulder. So also of real importance for Buddhist research that we do not have a southern Indian version in Ajanta, but a story known today from much later Divyavadana collection. Yeah, so the story about Shyamavati and Udayana. Now I would like to introduce to you the same story in one really interesting place. The name of it is Kanaganahari. It is really very little known. In Kanaganahari we have huge reliefs. What you see now is nearly 3 meters high. Same looking 60 reliefs which were covering quite a big stupa. Still, we are in Andhra, in this Amaravati school of sculptures, something like 1st century CE, maybe a little bit earlier. And here on this two slabs, which were originally standing together, we have exactly the same story. We have Udayana here, you can still see his bow, and Shyamavati. How do we know that this is this story? There are inscriptions, and one says Devi Shyamavati, Queen Shyamavati, and King Udayana on another one. Why this is so important? First of all, that below we have this particular scene, and above we have the most important scene in Kanaganahari at all. There is Mara's army on the right side, and enlightenment of the Buddha on the left side, and also that this reliefs were directly on the main entrance to the stupa compound. Above enlightenment and below this story about Shyamavati and Udayana. When we come back now to Ajanta 10, now you will understand the importance of this story. So the program here must have been Buddha life stories to Jatakas, and one story playing in the lifetime of the Buddha, showing the life of Upasakas, just showing the life during that time, because of reasons which are difficult for us to understand, maybe just to put this holy life into our time, showing people like you and me. You also can be Shyamavati, take care of your Udayana. So maybe because of reasons like that. But among so many different such stories, the story about Shyamavati was just considered to be of real importance and depicted on the main entrance to one stupa, and here among the most important narrative topics of the entire site. So this is really of importance, and thanks God that we still have in Ajanta the real place where all this representation were in original place. We stay in Ajanta and come to paintings from the second period in the 5th century BCE. It is 520. This is like activity in Ajanta somehow stopped. But actually, narrative representations that they, or that was what has been called program, they stopped like not later than 500 CE. In this time, we have very many representations of different scenes from the life story of the Buddha. I would like just to show you only a few of them. I could not go farther without introducing to you the Queen Maya, to whom she was preaching in heaven of 33 gods, heaven of Indra. And this story is also represented here in one wonderful painting in Ajanta 17, where we, like in the movie, have three scenes, one above another. The Buddha in the in heaven, preaching to gods, Buddha coming down, and Buddha preaching on earth. This is this wonderful painting. Now in the drawing, and also now in enlargement. So here we have the Buddha in the heaven of 33 gods. Here on the right side, our right side, we can see Indra in his characteristic crown. Now enlargement of the left side. Here is she. I wonder which one. Actually, I really don't know. Is it this what we see like naked? Actually, they are not really naked, these women, but they are clad in so thin, probably silk robes that we cannot. Sometimes in the paintings you can see little points. There was just a pattern on the on the stuff. So that must be probably the lady in the middle. But interesting is also this one on our right side, in this striped garment. Looks like, I don't really know, it looks like actually meditating woman, maybe somebody from Brahma heaven. That's like Brahmans look like, but the point is there are no women in Brahma heaven, so that's my problems with it. So that was the upper scene. Now in the middle we have like the Buddha together with gods, Indra and gods of Trayastrinsha heaven, and Brahma and Brahma Kayika gods is coming down on earth. And the biggest scene when he's preaching in Sankisha together with among monks, and King Prasenajit came and monks came here. There is also one interesting woman here on the side. If you know the story, there was the nun Utpalavarna who came here, but she came too late. And she still wanted to stay, to be in the first row, to welcome the Buddha in the very first moment he's back on the earth. So she did something which she probably should not. She changed herself into a king, into a Chakravartin king. The painter in Ajanta showed that in a very wonderful way. She's sitting here on the elephant. There are steps. Sorry, I must go back, but I don't know now which direction. We have here, there is a chakra, which is the will of the Chakravartin king, and here the jewel of the Chakravartin king, and other symbols of the emperor. And she is wearing a crown, and there is umbrella above her, so she is really like a real queen, like a real king, but she has wrist of them. Of a woman. So really wonderful pictorial language showing us she is still a woman here. So Utpalavarna is Chakravartin, is represented here. Shlingloff thinks that this person here down, right to the Buddha, is also of importance. I don't know what's happening now. I have to close it somehow, but I don't know how. Analayo, please help. pictures started to be small. I don't know what is happening.
I think it should be okay now.
Yeah, okay, I have it. Thank you. So we have here on the our right from the Buddha, the only monk which is showing something with his hands, not like all others keeping hands in Anjali. Shringlov thinks that might be the monk Kaludain, who recognized it was not a king Chakravartin, but it was Upalavarna, because he could smell the woman, the nun. So the story about Utpalavarna is represented in several schools. It must be of importance. The entire story must be of really big importance. Maybe because of practice of meditation, that the monk could go out of his body, be together with monks, with gods. So this moment from the life story of the Buddha, where the gods came to the man and man could see the gods, maybe that was of real importance. And this nun Utpalavarna, who is shown sometimes here like a monk, sometimes like a king. That must also be of importance. This wonderful picture I just wanted to see, show you, really like it in the movie, that the Buddha coming among, standing between Brahma and Indra and coming down to earth. And monastic person, I would say both of them are nuns, because they have the shulans covered, and the goddess coming out of earth. We will still come to her later. So there's really fantastic representations. We have several representations, and for reasons difficult to explain, but she was the nun, but she was enlightened. She could make miracles. She could change her body into the king. And please remember, when the Buddha was born, he was Mahapurusha. He could be Chakravartin and he could be the Buddha later. So that the nun could change her body into Chakravartin, that might be of symbolic, which is probably of real importance. Here on this wonderful Gandhara, newly excavated piece, you can see all seven jewels of the Chakravartin above Utpalavarna changed into Chakravartin. So really important person. Yeah, that's what I said, told you before. Maybe that's Kaludain. Yes, now once again coming back to the same depiction, and also coming to something which is represented here, and for first on the first glance difficult to explain. I hope you can see it. There are pots and there are coins falling down from this pots. Something really strange, something what we actually do not expect in the Buddhist monastery. But it is something which is of real importance, so I put that like point three of my lecture, and really would like to introduce also this point to you. I called it female beauty for luck and prosperity. We will deal now with beautiful women, women from the earth, so human bodies, human beautiful women on earth, but also with goddesses, and just in this context, some representation just to give you introduction for that, what I'm here talking about. In Ajanta, where everything is still on the old place, only there we can see that was meant to be all together, not separately in different points. And when you have just separate picture like this, you can come to really strange ideas about it. Kumarasvani, whom is really great, one of the greatest Indian art historians, he recognized in the picture, you can see, symbol of the spoken word, sutra supported by a lotus. We have a conch, and we have a lotus, and we have something strange, this brown, coming out of the conch. When you take different examples, and especially this one, there are very many such such pictures in Ajanta caves. Here on the right side, you see it's exactly the same, the conch, the lotus, but what is coming out from the conch? This is money. There are coins. And when you walk through the entire site in Ajanta, you will recognize all these conches with money, all this placed also together. Yeah. And this is better to recognize in that conch treasure of God Kubera, Kubera Vaishravana, and lotus treasure of him. And we have such representations like Shankanidhi and Padmanidhi here in personifications. One has a lotus on the head, another has a conch on the head, and what is falling out, there are coins. This is treasure. This is money. And what we have in the entire Indian art from the very beginning, just next to Jatakas or scenes from the life of the Buddha, we have representations of paradise. And women play really important parts in this depictions, because they are beautiful, because they show luck. So here we have from Sanchi Stupa 1, a representation of paradise, beautiful vegetation, water, human or gods. Actually gods, but when you look now on the top right side, this is not the normal plant, but this is Kalpavriksha. This is wishing tree. You can have everything what you want from this tree. There are pieces of jewelry growing here and clothes and stuff like this. You have garlands, and you have this gods playing music, giving to you material goods. Well, we have, as I said before, such representations everywhere, and this is definitely a very old tradition. Like here we see yakshas from the mouths are growing all these garlands, bearing jewelry. We have them in ornamentation everywhere. We can only look. But already as here, the 2nd century BCE, that's actually the oldest what we only have from Buddhists, you see in this garland, on the left side we see a Jataka, Vilara Jataka. On the right side we see a scene of enlightenment of the Buddha. There is a throne, there is Mara, there is Buddha, Mara soldiers around. So really important scenes, but all that is shown in this garland, and from the garland good things like mangoes, nothing is so good, and on the side jewelry, pieces of jewelry are growing there. So we have this part which is of importance for Dharma, for teaching, but we also have this other part. As I said, you can recognize such representations everywhere. Here this example is especially important because here the Buddhist symbols are really small when you compare it with beautiful couples on elephants above. It is in the 1st century BC, 2nd century BCE, in Ajanta and also later, you just see all this wonderful couple above, around everywhere, on the ceilings and also on the walls. And in Ajanta too, it's especially much telling examples. So when you go into Ajanta cave too, just in front of the main entrance, you have the main chapel with the preaching Buddha. But on the side, there are two side chapels. And in these chapels, there are yakshas sitting there. On the left side, you have a yaksha with money on the hands. I consider them to be Mani Padra and Pudra Padra, but not, I mean, there are two brothers, so they only can sit on one level, not in one is higher. But there is also something below, and it looks like a hip. When you look, in Ajanta caves, you would recognize all these hips on the side of yakshas just everywhere. And also, when you search in entire old Indian art, you will find heaps like this. So there are heaps of money, there are heaps of good things, not only money, but jewelry or sometimes fruit, something, everything what is good. And of importance for us today, that also the female deities, different goddesses of prosperity, who are also having this success with money. Here is raining, there are coins falling from heaven. Also such goddesses are standing on very similar heaps of money. And in this way of thinking, women play a really extremely important role. Actually, they are more important than as male deities. This couple I will introduce to you shortly. So this is Hariti and her husband, sometimes in the north Panchika, sometimes in the south Kubera, who is the lord of all yakshas. We have these heaps of money everywhere. So now we go to the right chapel. Here is Hariti and Kubera sitting there, Hariti taking care of children, and also on the side, these wonderful paintings. Now in the copy, so you see better. On the right side, we have again this heap of money. And on the left side, wealthy women, beautiful wealthy women, and healthy children. This is what everybody, of course, wants to have. Such representations are known from all different school of Buddhist art, and they play from the very early beginning the really important way, and that in very different ways. There are goddesses. Is on the right side, the iconography, which is still alive, goddess Lakshmi. That on the left side, we don't know but who that was. We call it Yakshini from Didarganj, where she was found. That must have been a really important, important goddess. Well, the goddesses, this is something which goes back into really very, very early times. The dating here I give in millenniums, no more than hundreds of years, but thousands of years. So this is the earliest Indian art of on Indian subcontinent, which was found. And we can and we should take it for granted that all this later veneration of female deities, there are three Buddhist and Pan-Indian and something really very, very old. We see it in Indian art actually everywhere. The so-called Shalabhanjika, which is the Yakshini of the tree, and the old belief that only such Yakshini can bring the tree to have blossoms, to have fruit. She is standing with one arm above holding the tree, and we see them starting 2nd century BCE really everywhere. And of course, this was being taken to a representation to the iconography of the nativity of the Buddha. Sometimes when the picture is not entirely preserved, we actually cannot say is it Shalabhanjika or this is Maya. This Yakshinis, sometimes in couples, they have different attributes. They were taken, like here with this cornucopia, into representation, the most important representations of the Buddhas. We have depictions of mothers, we have depictions of goddesses giving wealth, giving health, giving food. Now, they got different meaning. When we are in Mahayana monasteries, we try to know, if we know it correctly, it's another way, but we sometimes the iconography is there, so we can recognize Tara, we can recognize Brikutis, but as a matter of fact, they are still on this same old way to show the female beauty, maybe of goddesses, but of these Yakshinis, but also just to show you, to show to everybody, to the pilgrims coming there, this wonderful world of healthy children and wealthy house, wealthy wives. The goddesses in later Buddhism, they got meaning. I just took one, Mahamayuri, I hope you can see who she is, just represented just here. There's the peacock standing here, so Mahamayuri, Mayura is a peacock, so she is the goddess, the peacock goddess. So originally, she is certainly the personification of Dharani against snake bites. She was there to be invited into a house that the snakes don't do us any harm. In later Buddhism, this changed. We have important text about Mahamayuri and lists of different protecting deities. So she turns from being protector of humans against snakes to be protector of Dharma against the enemies of the Dharma. But this is still the same tradition. She is getting another meaning. The most important, of course, is the goddess Tara, who can protect you against all harms of or evils. So this is this protecting way of female deities, but also of giving wealth, all that the money and healthy children. I told you before, we have here this money falling down, but now A really important question appears. Okay, we have that, but as a matter of fact, we have here the Buddha coming down. What should it mean? Why? Why we have it here? This is a representation of the Buddha. This is an important moment of the life story of the Buddha. The Buddha will come down, will take a seat, will preach. This is of important. The Dharma is of important. Not this money falling down. Yeah, but this is not really like this. The Buddha is coming down on earth. And the goddess of earth is coming to welcome him. He was in heaven. He's coming on earth. And she is really here. She is here. The goddess of earth has different names, like Bhumi, but it is also known under the name of Vasudhara. I would like to recommend this really interesting book to you about female deities, protective deities. Vasudhara in Sanskrit means somebody who is carrying the treasure, so the earth goddess, who is, everything is coming out from the earth. So the treasures, it's not only jewelry, but first of all, food, rice. She's bringing all that, and she also belongs to the picture as a person, belonging at the same time to the important sutra, important dharma, but she is coming up out of the earth also because of the treasure. And this is how she is represented in later times. She has the vase of water. In the earlier times, she was represented like in Maravijaya, in enlightenment. She was coming to give a witness for the Buddha. And this jar of water was actually to bring the witness of that. But first of all, water is that what we need to survive. She has here in this later time, which is... That's Nepal, but the iconography was first of all from the Pala time in eastern India in like 9th and 10th century. She has jewelry, she has mango, she has rice, she has all that what human beings need actually to live on earth, not to think about nirvana. So, when we see that in this context, it is of importance to understand that. It was really difficult to give names for that, because all this Vasudhara is a goddess, same like Kubera, Vaishravana or Hariti. So we cannot call the Buddha is holy and other representations like profane. It's definitely not. But we can make the distinctions between topics, themes, relevant for enlightenment and not relevant for enlightenment. And this is what we see from the really very, very beginning of Buddhist art. And we cannot ignore this. That people coming into Buddhist monasteries, they came to hear the Dharma, but also to ask for everyday luck and prosperity. And exactly for that, these female deities giving food, taking care of children, giving prosperity in all different manners, and giving protection against, starting with snake bites, but also protection for Dharma in this brighter sense. This female deities played a really very important way. very important role. This distinction between themes relevant and irrelevant for Enlightenment, this is something coming from me. I'm still working on that. I would really like to ask you also for your opinion about this. And I'm looking forward for your questions, or if you wish more pictures from Ajanta, I will send to everybody who wants to know something more about Indian art. Thank you very much for your attention. Thank you, Analeo.
Recording is off.
Recording is off.
Recording is off.
Oh, danke schön.